Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Anthony Braxton, 23 years of combination experience, a driver on Truck 7 with Portland Fire and Rescue, Brothers in Battle cadre member. Growing up, Anthony was attracted to public service and was thinking law enforcement, but in high school, sports kind of pushed some of those notions to the side. Right before Anthony was set to go into the education field, he had a friend ask him about the fire service, which really got things going again to a point where Anthony sought it out, jumping in with both feet and never looked back. Anthony is a diehard truckie through and through. Although he jokes towards the engine, we all know on the fire ground, we all have a place where things need to get done. I certainly hope the listeners can truly tune in when we discuss the topic of VES and Anthony's mindset towards it. With that, I present Anthony Braxton.
My name is Anthony Braxton. First and foremost, I see myself as a full-time husband, full-time father, full-time student of our job, part-time instructor, part-time musician and gardener. Those are kind of my three personal passions outside the original touchstones I talked about. I've been in the fire service for a little over 23 years. Growing up, about middle school, high school-wise, I always knew that I wanted to be of service. At that time of my life, law enforcement was kind of my focus for whatever reason. Like, that's how I saw myself serving. Into high school, athletics were big. Went to school, played sports, kind of got sidetracked from that life of service. At least as a responder, decided I was going to go into education. And then just the summer right before I left school, man, somebody asked me if I ever thought about being a firefighter. And for whatever reason, like it brought me back to my previous thoughts of law enforcement, but I could not shake that feeling, shake that thought, and just kind of started to find myself walking by fire stations, peeking in. You know, wonder what they're doing in there, wonder what the days are like. And I just realized it was something I needed to dive into. So I steadily started to do that. Wasn't sure if I'd be able to handle myself with the medical side of it. So enrolled in a nighttime EMT class, realized that I could do that. And then just looked for ways of volunteering and found an opportunity. And once I was in the mix, I knew that it was for me. And it was what I needed to do with my life.
Okay. So essentially, it sounds like you kind of got bit by the bug. So what were your next steps to get your foot in the door to see if the fire service was exactly what you wanted?
All right. So I grew up in the city of Seattle. And, you know, I remember seeing rigs every now and then as a kid. Like, times have changed, right? Back then, it was like something was on fire or somebody was fucked up. Right. Mm-hmm. So infrequent things happen. So I didn't know any firefighters. So I kind of reached out to my mom. She was a legal secretary and was like, hey, do you know anybody? And turns out through her job connection, she did. So I was able to talk to a couple individuals who encouraged me to pursue some opportunities. And King County Fire District 20 is a little combination apartment that borders Seattle Southern Edge. So I got hooked up with one of their firefighters to talk with. And it just so happened that a recruitment process was going for their fire department. So put my name in the hat, got selected. And then they provide all of Washington State credentials, like the firefighter one, your EMT if you don't have it already. And then their volunteers supplement the on-duty staffing, which is only like Monday through Thursday daytime hours, and volunteers work all evening, all weekend. And this is like a pretty dense urban area, right? Like low income, so a lot of calls, a lot of action. And once I started in their program and caught my first training burn, it was just like, this is it. Like, this is the thing. This is what I've been searching for. This can fulfill me. And, you know, it was pretty soon after that. I was with them for, about a year. And I started the testing process. And I got put up by Portland Fire pretty fast within that process. And haven't looked back since then.
Okay. So I'm assuming, with an agency the size of Portland, once you applied and you got hired, you had to go through some sort of academy recruit school, right?
Definitely. Yeah, Portland Fire, we have a pretty extended training. At that time, I think I was in academy for 6 months. on a 40-hour week. And then we transfer over to Station 2, which is a training station. It's staffed with an engine and a truck. There are firefighter trainers on both apparatus. So you move from the academy, you go to Station 2, and you're still on the drill campus, but you have a first due that you respond to. It's a slower first due. So most of your day is spent on the training academy, kind of taking what you've learned in, or excuse me, on the training ground, taking what you learned in academy, applying them to, I guess, real world at the time, right? Like just on duty application, and then still responding in your first due. And the sweet thing is that you have the keys of the city, so you have the ability to go on any fire in the city, any major incident. So the trainers take you to those to hopefully get some work in. If not, to walk the scene, talk to the first due crews. But it is located in our 3rd Battalion, which is our kind of our busiest, most frequent area of fire. So you do get to go on active incidents quite a bit. The program has stayed similar throughout, my 20 plus years in the department. There's been a few changes, but that's kind of the model we do. So it doesn't matter if you have previous experience. You go through our academy, kind of learn how they want you to do things, how we want you to do things, and fly from there.
So after, is that with everybody? So if everybody goes through the academy process, passes it, they get assigned to that particular station first before
Yeah,
going out. That is
correct.
awesome.
And then so you're at that station, and at that time for me it was like you did 3 engines on the engine, or excuse me, 3 months on the engine. If you're successful at the time, you're still taking tests, being evaluated. You graduate from the engine, you do 3 months on the truck, learn truck work exclusively, operate as a truck company within the city, and then you go finish your probation out typically at a double company, and then from then you float and wait for a full-time assignment.
Okay. I mean, like, I don't hear that very often, but I personally feel like that is pretty jam up to do that for all the crew members coming out.
Yeah, I think there's some upside to it, right? Upside is that you're just involved in the training process for so long with a dedicated cadre, right? I think a downside to it is that it does take away some of the onus on our incumbent membership to bring up people through the probationary process, right? Like they kind of, there's almost an assumption like you're there. Like not that people don't, like senior firefighters don't step out to these recruits or probationary firefighters still, but like the onus is off them. So I think there's a little bit of give and take. I did feel personally highly prepared to hit the streets and also ready, man, because it's a long process, right? And you do feel successful when you've made it through. So I did, I think I had 2 years on the job. So in 2005, I realized how much I love the job, how much I love going to work. So I did go take Chicago's test back in 05 with about 60,000 other cats, just because I wanted that much more. Not that my organization, I don't feel as I feel we have a high standard. I love being a Portland firefighter. But back then, man, I was like, I want more.
Okay. And so you did your stint 3 months on the engine, 3 months on the ladder. What was your first assignment? I don't want to say official, but what was your first assignment outside of that?
So I went and finished my probation at Station 25, which is a double company on our east side. Usually our floaters, or excuse me, those probationary firefighters work a Kelly release schedule. So you're doing all the replacements for firefighters on those apparatus. So you float between the engine and the truck. There was a lieutenant on one of the engines at Engine 25 who had been a trainer of mine at Station 2. So he actually asked for me, and I was on the engine at Station 25 for those 3 months, which was a little atypical that I didn't float between the rigs. But at the time, right, big generational changes within the fire service, within my own fire department. So all of the guys that I went and worked with were older than my dad. You know what I mean? Like senior firefighters who'd been working together at that station as a crew for decades. So different dynamic than we have in the job right now, but an amazing experience to go into to see, how they held themselves, the love they showed each other, and just the open arms in which they welcomed me. So I was there for 3 months, finished my probation, then went out into the regular companies. You kind of fill a traveler spot, just kind of vacancies. But at that time, big big transition in the department, a lot of people retiring. So I got a full-time assignment pretty fast after that.
Okay. And was that on the current apparatus you're on now or no?
No, it was on engine 31. It was engine 45 at the time, engine 31. It's yeah, I don't know if you know Cody Terrestrial. He was at 31. So I went to that assignment, engine 31, for a little bit. Got transferred out to another engine company in our inner east side, engine 28. And then had interviewed to go to the double company that I'm at now. While I was at engine 28, had to wait for about a year or so, and then transferred over. So I had 4 years on the job when I went over to station 7.
Okay. One thing that intrigued me, I want to ask you to bid for another assignment. You mentioned the word interview. Is that something everyone has to do, or is that something Portland does?
So the station that I'm at now is one of our technical teams. So for all the technical teams across the city, you have a more formalized interview process to get into. Most of our other assignments, you go step through the talk to the captain, talk to the crews, submit a transfer request. So we don't have a bid system. It's just more of like, who does the captain want? And hopefully the captain has consulted with the crews as to who do they want. And then you're able to step in that assignment, and you can stay in that assignment on that apparatus for your whole career if you decide to. So our technical, I had to, our station that I'm at now, crossmans a hazmat apparatus. So I had to interview to get in that station.
Okay. And so throughout your process, throughout your journey to get where you are right now with your current assignment, your current crew, did you seek out those what we would call into the job firefighters, the ones that wanted to train, wanted to get better, wanted to go to fires, things like that?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that was my driving reason to go to Station 7. It's our busiest double company and our busiest battalion. I wanted to go there to do the job, get experience. I went there with a number of individuals from my own recruit class that I connected with who felt the same. One member in particular, this guy named Jason Stensgaard. We came through training together and have worked every assignment together since then, till right now. We're both assigned to Truck 7 on A shift. I drive the front. He's our outside vent, our artillerman. So me and him have been connected at the hip basically through our careers. And then along with that, right, like finding those other like-minded individuals that, I've always felt like I've needed to surround myself with people that I wanted to be like. So I've definitely sought them out throughout my career.
And for those that are listening, how, and I always like to ask the guests this, but every guest has a different perspective and a different way of making me think like, oh, I never thought about this. How important is it for firefighters coming into the service today to seek out those, what I would call mentors, whether they know it or not, that they're mentors?
I think it's of utmost importance, right? Hopefully their fire department has a culture in which senior members are actively seeking them out, right? Like that there's a culture of bringing up the younger, that senior man or senior firefighter mentality. I think it's of utmost importance to look because you might be in a fire department that doesn't have that culture, right? And it's really easy to fall into either complacency or just the routine of how others carry themselves. And if they're not carrying themselves to better themselves in the job through constant training and reflection and refinement, it's easy to see that pathway and follow it yourself, right? So like I believe that you have to seek those individuals, even if they are actively seeking you, like seeking those others, right? Because like that's what this job entails, man. Like we're entrusted with so much that we have to constantly be reflecting on ourselves, who we're with, how we're pushing ourselves to serve the public at its best, and also to keep ourselves like mentally and physically fit and prepared to do this job.
No, definitely. Definitely. Okay. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Portland Fire Rescue? How many stations, personnel? It doesn't have to be exact numbers, just rough estimate.
Portland Fire. We're 31 stations, 4 battalions. We've got engines, trucks, squads. I think we've got 28 engines, 10 trucks, a couple squad companies. Those squads, one of them's like a box rescue, another one's a rescue pumper. We're four person across all apparatus, except for our what we term rescues. We have three rescues in my battalion. They're two person rigs that staff kind of a brush rig. They go to low acuity medical calls, but also supplement our box response. Portland itself's like 150 square miles. We're three platoons, a little over 700 members. Fire response, we send four engines, two trucks, two chiefs. You'll catch a squad company and a rescue. So I think, at least in my battalion, you'll catch that rescue. So I think all told, it's 32 members going to a fire, whether that's a single family, multifamily, or commercial. That's just our initial loadout.
ALS, BLS, both, one or the other.
Yeah, all rigs have one paramedic on it. The rest of us are EMT basics. That's been a transition through my career. When I first got hired, all engines were ALS, all trucks were BLS, but we've hired enough medics in the process to have one on every apparatus.
And is it a requirement to have ALS status to promote or no?
No, it's
No.
not. Yeah, we've got ALS officers, BLS officers. The only confinement within that is it does limit your assignments after a firefighter because you'll have ALS officer house, BLS officer houses.
All right.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned you're the truck driver. So what's the rank structure like?
It's just firefighter across the board. There were years ago, probably 2 decades ago, we had our union went and got money for an engineer position. And then brought it to the membership. And at that time, the membership decided to spread that pay increase across all members instead of creating a designated engineer position. So typically, it's a senior firefighter that drives. It's not always the case. Sometimes crews will rotate, especially on the engines, because not everybody wants to drive on those first ends. Right? On the trucks, a lot of times it'll be, you're. Yes, when I got on the truck, my assignment, I rode the jump seat, the irons firefighter position for a number of years. Got to go back and ride the tiller, and then took over full time driving, maybe 10 years ago on my apparatus. I mean, like I said, I work with Jason Stensgaard, so him and I, he tillers the back. We're a B team pair on all assignments for fire duty.
Is that a so you started in the back and then you went to the front. Is that
Yeah.
a tested position?
No, still, it's we're all certified to tiller, all certified to drive. It was just for him and myself, we both have the same seniority, right? Since we came through training together. I was on the truck for maybe a couple years before he was able to transfer over from the engine. But we just had a conversation one day. It was just like, hey, man, what do you want to do? Right? And, I like to drive. He likes to tiller. Not that I don't enjoy tillering, but, we just kind of locked it down from there. So we've been fixing those positions for the last decade.
And then I'm assuming the next position up is either lieutenant, captain. I don't know what you classify
Yeah,
as.
it's lieutenant. Lieutenants are basic, our first level of company officer. Then you test up to captain. There's one captain per station. And then from there, battalion chief, and then the various chief levels after that, if you decide to continue to test up.
So one captain per station, that means the other two shifts have lieutenants.
Yeah, it's just like a senior lieutenant. Yeah, double company. It's the senior lieutenant rides the truck, so they're kind of I think the term is ship commander technically, and then the captain manages the whole house. Captain rides the truck.
So for my next question for you, in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you? Because it's that word is it's a buzzword, it's all over social media.
What does aggressive mean to me? I think what it first means to me is like how we should be performing. Right. When I talk to recruits or, at conferences or lecturing, I typically talk about how I truly believe that deliberate, decisive, aggressive action save lives. Right. Deliberate, I understand the consequences of my actions. Decisive, I have the ability to make critical decisions quickly because that's what RCNs call for. And then aggressive, right? I'm going to take forceful action in doing so. That's what it brings to mind to me, right? Like we're in an occupation where time is of the essence, right? We're putting ourselves at risk for people who we don't know. So how do we operate in that fashion, right? I think it's through education, intentful training, like you asked before, right? Surrounding ourselves with those individuals who are going to make us better, both physically, mindset-wise, job skill-wise, and then just continuing to push and trying to be that type of individual on your rig, that type of individual that can be an example for, newer individuals coming up, and just what the public expects of us, right?
No, definitely. Okay. With that being said, what was your purpose that allured you to the truck? Because you mentioned, you started on an engine and now you're on a truck company. So what was your drive to get you there? Was that something you always wanted to be going through the process of being a firefighter?
Nah, man, like I when I first got hired, I thought the engine was where it was at, right? And then I got a taste of truck work, a truck work for my fire department. My fire department, truck work primarily revolves around search and vent and extrication. And once I got a taste of that, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I always, cats in my fire department will kid me, right? Because I'll catch trades or overtime assignments on the engine, and I never want to ride the nozzle, right? And they're like, "Why don't you ever want to be on the nozzle?" And I hate being fixated in place, right? Like you find yourself on the nozzle, like, "Hey, come over here. We got fire in the attic. Okay, come over here." And it's like I'm tied to this line, and I never wanted to be tied to the line. I always wanted to get the line in place, search the fire room, pull ceiling, open up walls, and then when I actually started to work on a truck company, it was like that experience of having being untethered, right? And what that requires you to both think about and manage in the fire environment really appealed to me. Search and rescue, right? Looking for those occupants, right? Vent jobs, extrication jobs, that thinking like what of time is of the essence. You have to be on point with your skills, be able to size up and implement, tool choice and tool use. It just I don't know, man. It's just what I started to desire. And then along with that, right? Like for us, our assignments 4-2 and 2, right? Four engines, two trucks on a box assignment. If it's a working fire truck company, you're working, right? You're either searching or you're venting, right? You're not pulling a backup line, doing water supply, writ, like all important, very needed jobs. But on a truck company for us, you're in the mix. So
No, for sure. That's one thing I kind of equate because for me, for my career wise, I was on an engine for 16 years. And we were opening up a new station and they were putting a dedicated, I don't want to say dedicated, but it was going to be a truck company, a ladder company. It's a Quint. So I let me correct my phrase. It's a Quint. We have a first due and we don't have an engine with us. It's just the ladder and we have a brush truck with us. And so truck work heights were never really my jam. I kind of like if we had ladder training where we had to climb ladders, like I would do it, but it's like just do it and get it done. And like I could say I hit the checkbox. And after attending a couple conferences and listening to podcasts, talking to people, it was like I'm letting a fear prevent me from exploring an option. And so when that station was getting ready to open up, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna put my name in the hat. And I applied, I got the position, and then I started to learn to, and I'm a 40-year-old man, so I'm not afraid to say like everybody has fears. Like I don't care who you are, there's always something that you're like, I don't really like that and whatnot, but I didn't want to let that stop me. So every shift we have a mid mount, so I'd get in the bucket and I'd go up like 50 feet and stop. And I'm the only one in the bucket. And I just look around and I'm like, all right, it's not that bad. 'Cause like your mind plays like really silly games. It's like, well, what happens if I didn't set the truck up right and all of a sudden the ladder's gonna fall? And I'm like, that's just like those are the thoughts that would go through my head, or the ladder would somehow just start going down on its own. And then every other shift I'd go up 60, 70, 80, 90. And you know, granted, you got to get used to that swaying if it's kind of
For
windy out
sure.
there. And I'm like, all right, it's not that bad and stuff. And then, you know, it's just the skill sets with ladder work and engine work, two different things. And no, I'm not throwing any shade to my engine guys, because the engine's very important. Like, you have to get your line right in place, put the fire out, things of that nature. But ladder work is different because you have a complement of ladders. You should be able to execute those sometimes by yourself. Like, I am like, the way my mind works, I understand fire service, we work in teams, but there will be a situation, an incident where you're going to have to throw that ladder by yourself. You're going to look around and no, everyone's going to be working. There's not going to be any time for that. So, like, I started embracing that. And I can truly say, being on a truck company, it's an art form. Throwing ladders is an art form. There's a skill. You have to be able to perfect it. Not just if, because you're watching somebody do it one way, doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it that way. You have to figure out what works for you. And so I understand your sentiments on that.
Man, like I agree with that fully. It's I think you know like in your mental, or like you said, when I first got hired on with Portland, right? Like we've always prided ourselves on aggressive interior operations, right? Like we go in, we'll never stay out. We're getting that first line in, and at that time, right? Like there wasn't. It was almost looked at truck work was, you know, like engine helpers, right? It's what sometimes people call, oh, we're going to open up for them. You know, we'll pull the ceilings, we'll force entry, we'll get on the roof. And as I was introduced young in my career, again, finding those people that I sought out was like, hey man, like all functions on the fire ground are to support the search, right? Like, and how they protect the search, how they're getting their lines in between victims and the fire, how they're opening up so that we can make a push for our search operations. And that type of shift in mindset really allured, you know, attracted me. And then, you know, with that attraction, just like you said, like all that art form that encompasses it, because as you're in that fire environment without the protection of a hose line, potentially maybe you're on floor two and the bulk of the fire is on floor one, you know, what you have to think about is so different. Right. You have to think about not only your operation, but those engine company operations. Are those guys making a push? Who's on the line? Like, are they the crew that's going to make the push? What are the fire conditions that I'm facing up here on floor two? Right. Like, can I extend my search? Is this hallway going to light off? Like, all of that just really appeals to me. Just like you were saying, right? Like, I feel like it's made me a better firefighter. It's made me a better firefighter when I do catch those trades or overtime on the engine, right? Because of what I'm thinking about. While I'm supporting engine company operations, you
Definitely.
know, and then while I'm in the front yard, like, oh man, I wish I was on the truck doing this job, you know.
Earlier you mentioned, you know, before you moved up to the role of driver, you know, you were the irons position. There here recently at my organization, there are individuals who are pushing for riding positions. So, there's a number of us that are supporting it, that want it, but then there's another number that feels like, because other officers and we're potentially coming out with riding positions, we're micromanaging, or we're taking away their jobs of giving assignments. And at the end of the day, what we're the ones that want this, what we're trying to get them to understand is that's one less thing you as the
Completely.
officer have to worry about. We're not
Oh, yeah.
trying to tell you, we're not trying to micromanage, we're not trying to take away any delegation of your thought process. It's just the fact that that firefighter knows, hey, today I'm irons, or I'm the can, or whatever the case may be. So has that something your department have they always done that?
No, like in the past, they did. When I got hired, it was this, like, it was almost non-existent again. Like there was informal riding positions. When I first got hired for our single family responses, we set three engines in a single truck, right? So that single truck crew of four automatically split two and two to the roof, to the inside. two drivers, went to the top side. Your jump seat firefighter wasn't termed irons in that time. You're forcing entry. You're committing to the search, and then the officer's going to catch up. So we had these informal riding positions, right? What we, like you said, surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals, Jason Stensgaard and myself, when we got to the truck and we were on there full time together, we were like, hey, we need to formalize this. We need to create true riding positions as to who's bringing what. Because I remember one fireman I was tillering, you know, the senior guy on my truck at that time had 30 plus years. We're going to this fire, working fire, and all I'm thinking about, because I know I'm going to the roof, is, you know, if I'm faster to the saw compartment, I'm gonna have the saw on this job, right? And that's what I'm thinking about instead of everything else I should be thinking about in the fire, right? What my response. So Jason and myself are like, hey, we're gonna formalize this. We're gonna write out these positions. We're gonna write out what we're gonna bring on search jobs, on extrication, on vent. And then just through our involvement with our own training at Station 2 and relationships we had, those riding positions got carried down to Station 2 for their truck company. So all of our new recruits for, I don't know how many years now, the past 7 years have come to the truck learning those riding positions. And it recently has become formalized throughout our fire department, right? It's not necessarily like, you know, if you're riding this truck, if you're the OV, you have the saw. It could be slightly different than another truck company because they want a different individual have the sawyer, but you have a fixed position as to what you're bringing and what you're responsible for. So I've experienced and heard that pushback before, right? Like, you know, well, I want to be able to make the plan there for my guys when we get there. Well, that's a fucking plan, right? Not having a plan is a plan, right? Except now you're behind the eight ball. So I think what our officers have experienced is just like you said, it's freed up so much mind space for them and for our crews. We have the, like, we know who's bringing what, who's looking at what, where we're going to be. For my truck company, right, for Portland Fire, typically our first due truck is all in for search. We split two and two, right? We send two to the inside through the front door. Typically, it's usually the officer and the irons, and then our B team. We're looking for window initiated search. So our officer knows, hey, these guys are bumping a 360. If there isn't a report of a victim in a specific location, they know that we're going to be going to floor two on a two-story house fire, right? So they have an idea as to how we're performing, what we're performing. It's freeze. They don't have to decide what we're going to do. They know what we're going to be. And it allows all of us that, or allows especially the officer to call that audible where something has been changed up, right? Because we can just go away from that initial plan. So I know our officers have found an increased comfortability of like, you know, there's shit that's already been decided. We shouldn't be deciding like who's doing what, who's grabbing what, where we're going when we get to a fire. We should be attacking that fire, like you said earlier, aggressive, right? By having that stuff predetermined and then allowing that fire scene to create those audible situations. But even those audibles, for the most part, are already pre-planned out. Like, you know, maybe that inside truck team, maybe they're going to be yes now too, because that front door and whole front room is lit off, and it's faster for them to make entry in a bedroom and extend their search from there, because where it's a first due fire and the line's still being pulled, right? It's already pre-thought out things. And then within our engine culture, there has been riding positions, right? You're either riding the nozzle or you're on a hydrant. You're driving, of course, you're pumping, and the officer's doing their thing. So it's been a new journey for our truck companies, I'd say, over these past 10 years. By and large, it's been well received. But again, there's, you know, every now and then you catch pushback. But I think the biggest thing is for our newer membership at the recruit level coming through Station 2, they know exactly what is expected of them, what they need to bring, where what their area of responsibility is, right? It creates an easing of stress and tension for them. Yeah, I'm all for them.
Is there ever a situation in Portland where the truck's tied up or they're coming from an extending ETA and the engine has to do truck work or no?
Yeah, it can happen infrequently. Typically in our Southwest battalion, it's a hilly area where that second due truck getting there is a bit out. So if that first due truck is tied up on another call, Potentially engine companies will do truck work, not vent, but search, right? If the fire ground
Okay.
calls for it, vent. And it'll happen in other battalions every now and then, especially if you catch reports of somebody inside, right? That if that second due engine gets there before the first due truck, the second due engine could very well be sent in as a search crew, and then that first due truck will assume search as well, which is overload the assignment. But it's a pretty rare occurrence.
Okay. But do you guys have a formidable playbook for that where let's just say first engine gets there, active fire, whatever the case may be, and the another engine gets there before the first due truck, and let's just say the officer doing while performing the 360 sees a victim at a window. Like the audible, I guess, is made for that next engine. Hey, grab a ladder. We have a victim that we need to get down. Like I'm just
Yeah, I
trying to.
think, no, for sure. It's definitely been a discussion, especially amongst our engine companies, how they're, the engine at my station, for example, has had those thoughts. Like, hey, what if we pull up first due and the truck's not with us and somebody's hanging out of a window? Or we catch a report of someone hanging out of a window. What do we need to do? Well, we still need to pull a line, right? So again, riding four, we're lucky in that, like, right, you got the driver doing their thing. Not so firefighter can still pull a line. Officer in that hydrant position can throw a ladder and commit to a rescue, right? I think it's been informally realized across some of our engines, but nothing formally set down from the department.
Okay.
But it's also, very, our the way our double companies are spaced, right, where our truck companies are spaced, it'll be like an engine company, and then there's a truck right next to them. And then the other side of that truck company is an engine company, and then another truck. So it's, we tend to get there pretty fast as a
Okay.
truck. So we, again, those situations may call for an engine company to start commencing search operations, but then typically that truck company is going to be right there to help with that as well.
Okay. You mentioned the term window initiated search. So I know that was one of your definitely hot topics you want to talk about. So let's bring it to the floor. VES, window
Yeah.
initiated search, however you want to
Yeah.
call it,
Yeah.
this is your time.
Well, those terms, right? VES, window initiated search, VEIS, for me are all synonymous terms, right? They're all synonymous terms. It's just us finding a point of entry in which to initiate our primary search, right? When I was first hired in the fire department for Portland, right? At that time, again, single truck company, two people searching. We primarily front door searching, but in my training academy, I was taught VES. We just didn't have a term, but we also didn't learn flow path or door isolation. It was just like, yo, some fire environments, you got to get the job done, and it could be through a window. Now that term became constricted, or those thoughts became constricted in my own fire department, say 14 years ago, when the big push for VES was like, seemed like going all across the country, right? Like, man, enter, you got to isolate. You can't extend. This is a dangerous operation. So our department started to confine that tactic, or did confine that tactic, to just a target room only, and only with credible reports, right? So you're not allowed to extend past that, the initial entry room. There was a group of individuals in my fire department who were very displeased and unsatisfied with that confinement. I was a part of that, right? Like, why are we confined something in which we never have done before, right? Like, you're telling me as a if I initiate my search through the front door, I can go through this whole floor plan of this two-story or three-story townhome by myself from the front door to floor two, floor three, and search this whole place. But yet, if I get a credible report, somebody hanging in a room, I can't go past that initial room. Like, it made no sense, right? So steadily pushed back against that, and through time got our SOGs changed to where it's now it's expected what we're looking for, right? I do believe that that confinement of the tactic to that single room and to just that credible report is something that permeates across the fire service. Now, though, I think there's very few agencies that see VES as initiating a primary search, right? It's that thing to hold in the back pocket in case we actually have a credible report. Now, it's not just conjecture anymore. It's not just what people have experienced throughout their careers. I mean, we have hard data from Firefighter Rescue Survey as to where people are in the fire environment, right? Almost 45% of our fire victims in the bedrooms, almost 17% in those family rooms. We should be looking for those individuals in both places right now on those fire scenes, right? I truly believe VES needs to be assessed on all offensive fire grounds and performed on most. There's only a few instances in which we don't perform VES when we're the first to track and we catch all in for search assignments. You know, if it's a incipient fire and you get quick reports on fire attack or Irons firefighter, like it's small fire contained, no smoke conditions. Like we're going to do a full 360, get as much of a rep on that fire scene as possible. We're just not going to take glass, right? Exterior fire only, right? Homeless encampment up against a house, didn't make it in the living compartment. All right, same thing. We'll get a full rep just without taking glass. Or, you know, maybe that exterior fire goes into the attic right away, right? Not in the living space, but just goes up through the bird block and in the attic. And we get reports from the Irons firefighter, like, hey, light smoke, it's in the attic. As that B team, our truck will split then, right? We'll go two to the roof immediately. And that secondary truck will probably split as well, send two to the inside, two to the roof, because that information of which, hey, light smoke, full sighted, go to the roof. Other than that, man, like we're taking glass and we're initiating a search. What that looks like for us, right, is full 360. If we haven't caught credible information of a location, you know, we're looking for those audible visual cues. It's going to be on a first a single story residence, a two story residence, three story townhome. We're still looking to commit to entry off of a bedroom. One, typically readily isolatable space, and two, those hard numbers where we're finding people. And then, you know, through that assessment, we do extend our searches. So a couple areas in which I feel like that are missing elements of VES across our fire service is the need to have a dedicated size up for the tactic. Like, what are you looking at? What are you thinking about, right? Like, I don't think that's talked about enough. How does it look when we commit to entry, right? Like, we're not New York, right? I'm not committing a single person as an OV to do VES. We have a two-person crew that's going. So how does that look? For us, both members are going in, like, immediately. And my ideas, my thoughts, if I'm that first member going through, and it's really solely to pace based on how fast you've readied your PPE, you're the first up. That entry room, that's not my room. That's my partner's room. I'm going to go to the door, do my live fire layout, do my call out, and then I'm going to extend my search immediately to another bedroom within that environment, the location we're at. And I'm going to communicate my intent, my direction to my partner. And that's their room, that first room that we made entry in. Unless, right, that room is where we've had credible reports that somebody's located there. Then we're going to toss that room. And if they're not there, then we're going to extend our search. So what does that look like? You know, because it's typically VES across our service is a member waiting out on the ladder, you know, directing with a tick. And like, if it's good fire conditions, you ain't directing shit because you can't see anything through that tick because it's too hot and you've got too much smoke between your mask and even the camera. Right. So like the expectations for that, and again, driven by those numbers, firefighter rescue survey, how many people are truly brought out with just one person? Not very many,
Many.
25%, right? You know, the rest two, or if not a significant amount of more. So we should be dumping members in, two members in, because again, that's our point of entry. You know, thinking about go versus no-go metric, there's a whole line of thoughts, but I think the biggest thing, right, is just, and what we talk about through Brothers in Battle, what I talk about with my recruits, what I talk about when I'm at conferences is that, and search is just search. The only difference is how we initiate the tactic. Are we going through a door? Are we going through a window, right? The things that I'm evaluating, the things that I'm considering when I'm in the search environment after making entry through a window are the same damn things that I consider when I go through front door, right? I'm thinking about the same things. Can I extend my search? You know, where's the fire located? What are fire conditions? Who's on the attack line? Are they in position? Can I extend past them? Right, that same metric, you know, of evaluation I'm doing when I go through a window. The main difference, though, is my spatial awareness. So different, right? Instead of going through this open floor plan of a front door, I'm going into a 10 by 12 box that if fire conditions are present, I can close the damn door. Or maybe when I take glass, there's nothing present because the door is already closed, right? And that search in that room is done right then. Yeah, I'm a big proponent for VES. I think it's a big push that I'm personally trying to make. Other individuals I'm involved with are trying to make. Just open up those discussions, right? Because I truly believe it was constricted, you know, at least within my own fire department and in other organizations that I saw. You know, it was based off of fear, that constriction, right? We decided to put our own perceived safety in front of those we're here to serve, right? And I also believe that constriction, that fear, often gets compounded by leadership with very limited fire ground search experience, you know, right? Like, so we should be pushing back against that. And it's, and we do it through education and training, right? Being, having these conversations, having these thoughts of like, yeah, man, we allow our crews to go through the front door and search this whole occupancy without the protection of a hose line, without knowing exactly where the stairs are in some of these occupancies, especially older balloon frame construction. Those stairs could be anywhere, right? Like, why are we confining ourselves thinking that this operation is unsafe when, you know, I've done a full 360 of the structure as that B team. If I catch unconfirmed, you know, there's just general location reports of somebody trapped or no reports, right? And I know I'm dumping into a box that probably has a door. And if it doesn't have a door, if the door is burning, I can take a closet door and put it over it, right? Like, but typically it has a door, and I'm spatially aware again. And then when I open that door, I got 3 feet of hallway to this other bedroom across the way or to the right or the left that I know is there because in my size up, I saw it as I did a 360. Right. So it's, we got to break the fear of that tactic. And, you know, because it's what we're here for. We're here to put ourselves in harm's way for those we don't know. Right. And in doing it through going through a window, it's actually a spatially more aware and technically safer way of doing that. Not only that, we're putting ourselves in a location where people are at. So, yeah, we need to keep making the push to spread that message and make the change in our service.
So I'm going to ask this question now because it kind of goes back to like when I was in school, you would hear the teachers would be like, there are no stupid questions. But undoubtedly, there's going to be someone out there who wants to ask it but is afraid because they don't want to look bad. So my
Yeah.
question to you is, where would one go? And for anybody listening who had this notion, where would one go so they can educate themselves on these new window initiated search techniques, VES, VEIS? Like, because I'm sure
For
there's someone
sure.
out there going, well, my department doesn't have the experience or doesn't, and I'm not this again, I'm an adult. I'm trying to have a conversation. I'm not saying if you have a training captain, training chief, training cadre, whatever. Every organization is limited. Not every organization
Completely.
goes to a structure fire every single day. And so the fire service is forever evolving with new methods, new education, new technology. So where would one go if they don't have those experiences or those reps?
Completely, you know, and before I like I go into that, I would say like, you know, one thing I talk about, you know, because I started to talk about VES at conferences and, you know, I have a presentation and one point that I speak about is, you know, I'm incredibly blessed, right? I got four on my rig, right? I can talk about the fire we're going to as we're going with both the A and the B team. You know, we have our tool assignments, we have our certain, you know, responsibilities, what we're doing. I'm blessed. But I know that the fire ground doesn't care if I'm blessed or not. It doesn't care if I'm work for a
Facts.
professional or if I'm a volunteer, if I'm on an engine, if I'm on an ambulance arriving first, dude. It doesn't care. All it's going to continue to do is just trap people, right? And when we show up, be like, go, right? So I think, you know, that being said, right, it doesn't matter if your department goes to a lot of work or it doesn't. The potential is always there. So where can I go to look, right? And that's not just some online YouTube based. I think the beauty of what's happening in our service is all of these, technically I would call them smaller, but some of them are fairly large. These smaller conferences that are happening all across the country. These smaller conferences, you know, whether it be firemanship or you know, even FDIC, like that big conference, or con, you know, like Shemeketa Fire Conference happened in Oregon, the Pacific Northwest Fire Conference happened in Washington. I know this conference is all over the place. They are bringing cadres that instruct VES, whether it be Brothers in Battles cadre, Sean Duffy's cadre. You know, the names are escaping me right now, but there are so many people out there talking about VES and offering training. I think those opportunities, if you pull up most conferences, Capital Fire Training with RJ is offering this, like on the East Coast and in the South, right? Like, and if you don't, you know, if maybe you can't find one, then out members of those cadres from Brothers in Battle, from Capital Fire Training, from Search Culture are so open to having discussions with people that reach out to them personally, to one, maybe help them find a place to go, or even just to have a point of discussion about how to improve your own skill sets, right? So I think the opportunities are out there. Now, the us being able to take those opportunities, right, because of how much they cost, the travel, those can be a hindrance as well. I also know that firemanship prides itself on helping individuals attend the conference, right? At all different levels of payment. You know, we were just out there this last July, offering a couple of days of RVES class. You know, and one thing we talk about and we teach industry best standards, but we're open to talk about how can we help you and your organization, or help you in particular, whatever fire that might be, bring these things back and not just be ostracized, but to work through to help establish that culture within your own fire department. Because by and large, most of us, we've all been there. Right, like I fought that fight within my own organization with many others, but how do you make that change, that push? How do you make that operational change? And at the same time, how do you get that skill set for yourself? So, it's amazing what all these conferences are doing all across the country. So that would be my first starting point. But again, reach out, you know, reach out to me. Let's talk. We're open books. Any information that I've created on VES, from my presentation to lesson plans I've created, like yours instantly. It's not my stuff. It's stuff that I learned from others and added my own things to, but it's the fire services. So, and I think you'd find that amongst most people who are teaching. You know, search calls for Justin McWilliams is teaching all over the place. Open book, you know, would give you anything. Cody Terrestro, Brothers in Battle, Sean Duffy, all of them. So
No, it's so many nuggets were dropped, so many mic truth bombs, mic drops, because it's been my experience that, you know, I learn from what I call, and it, you know, it's definitely all due respect, I call them old heads, the OGs, okay? Because coming up in the fire service, I didn't know anything. I mean, it's not like I came through generations of firefighters. Like that's not the case. I think I'm the first one in my family to go into the fire service. So coming up, I learned things from the OGs. But what I've seen now is being able to get outside my own organization, my comfort zone, and attending different conferences. And the thing about conferences is most of them are going to do their homework, okay? Like they're going to vet these individuals that are coming in, make sure they're just not some random guy who says he's been to like 20,000 fires. And like, no, they're vetted. Especially with the fire service, everybody knows somebody. So you can't say you're one thing when you're not, because you're gonna get found out and sought out. So I say that to say what I feel like going on now, at least in my experience, is the old heads don't see this, these new techniques, these new information. They're just not, some of them are just not wanting to accept it. It's, I've done it this way for so long, and it's what it
Completely.
is. And it's like, okay, I get it, but there's different ways of doing things. And that's where the friction is, because, you know, you mentioned that you were able to, and I'm sure not just you, but whoever was involved with you, to get Portland to change policies and procedures. But I'm sure it was an uphill battle, because there are very
Bro,
many
yeah.
people I speak to that are like, bro, you wouldn't believe the shit talking I get, the targets being put on my back from our own people within our
Oh
own
yeah.
organization.
Yeah, when I first joined Brothers in Battle, man, like it was you know, right after its inception, you know, and at that time there were a lot of members from my fire department involved, because Cody was a member of Portland Fire at that time. You catch it on fire scenes all the time. Oh, here comes Brothers in Battle, go force the door, you know, and I'm working fires, right? Just a lot of friction. So how do you face that friction and still make advancement? Right? That's like $1 million question.
Ooh,
Right.
yes.
And it's just, you know, it's just taking those constant steps forward, no matter the arduous nature of it or the time that it takes, because if it's right, it's gonna fucking happen, right? And you know, for us, you know, when I didn't handle that friction incredibly well as a younger firefighter when I
Course.
first faced it, right?
Course.
So you know, like I probably didn't re respond back in the most appropriate ways. But as time on the job goes, you know, those relationships deepen. The relationships that you have, that I've had with individuals of influence in my fire department, who sees that, like, you know, I mean, shit, man, we used to get called East Side Cowboys, right? All those, you know, Braxton and Stens, they just, fucking cowboys, man. They just want to do hero shit, go through windows and stuff. And it's like, no, nah, man, that's not the thing, but I kind of like Eastside Cowboys. So yeah, let's put that on our truck jacket. I'll wear that. You know what I mean? And then as time goes by, it's just, it's a funny thing, right, man? Because like, if you were to ask people in my fire department, especially, you know, say 15 years ago about Jason Stensgaard, the guy I ride with, and they're like, oh, Jason's a great guy. You know, so personable. He's amazing. And then you talk about Jason Stensgaard or Anthony Braxton on Truck 7. Oh, those guys, like they think they're, you know, it's like, it's such this crazy disassociation we can do, right? Like your ego starts talking about things.
Yep.
So I think as time went by, from my own experience, just realizing needing to deepen those relationships to be able to have conversations. You're always going to have people incredibly obstinate and resistant. And those are the people, it could be any idea. They have stopped growing in this job. Like there are some people you're not going to fucking change. But I think by and large, most of us want to be good at what we do. We joined up to save lives. And that's why I fucking joined up, right? I want to save lives and make an impact on people. And I believe most people have that still within them, right? So to be able to have those conversations, create those relationships to where it's like you can start to have those deeper conversations as to like, well, you know, man, you don't mind searching the front of the line here. Why can't we just go through the window here and have those, you know, be able to set ego aside and just talk person to person, man to man, man to woman, right? Instead of those ideas of like cowboy versus, you know, old standards. So yeah, face that friction for a long time. And I still face it in other ways because, you know, like we're still trying to push in other avenues in our fire department, still trying to catch incumbents up with VES operations. But like, you know, I remember when I first went down to training, I got to have an opportunity to be a trainer on our truck too, down at our training station a few different times. And the first time I'm down there and wanted to teach window initiated search, these people who knew me but never knew me as an instructor, never worked with me on the line, were like, ah, you know, that's pretty advanced to talk to our recruits about. And it's like, well, it's not advanced if you learn it fucking day one, then it's just a part of your basics, right? So, and I think it's okay for incumbents who that it's not a part of their basics, but it's not okay if they're not reflecting and refining, trying to make it so, right? Just because of obstinance and this is how we've always done it, right? Like, well, there's better ways, man. Or like, hey, maybe we try it out and whatever it may be. Maybe it's not the jam. Maybe your way does win. But like to just be like, no, like that's just somebody of that's decided not to grow anymore, you know.
Facts. Okay. With that being said, how did the intro to Brothers in Battle occur for you to become a part of that cadre?
Man, like you said, right? Surround yourself with people you want to be like. You know, I heard about this cat. I was like, a guy from New York, the squad company guy. He's left New York, he's coming to Portland. I was like, oh, what? No way. Nobody's left New York to come to the Portland Fire. And then sure enough, you know, Cody had done just that, left squad one in Brooklyn for family reasons and came back to the Northwest and joined our fire department. Became a member of Engine 31, which is a station just east of my station. And I just kind of heard through the grapevine, like, oh, Cody started a training cadre, and a couple guys that I'm tight with were part of that cadre, right? And I had never met Cody, just still heard about this guy. And they started teaching forcible entry. And again, it's like I looking for people to surround myself with to be better. So I didn't know Cody, but I talked to these guys that I didn't know. I was like, hey man, I want to reach out to Cody because I want to be a part of this, right? I want to grow. I want to improve my skill set, be around you guys. You know, like I said, like, hey, if I reach out to him, you know, will you know, tell him who I am. You know, I'm gonna mention your guys' names to be able to, you know, as a whatever you call it, background reference. And then I just crafted an email to Cody because I didn't even have his phone number, man. Just wrote him an email and just kind of explained who I was, what I'm about, why I would love the opportunity to join his cadre. And he replied back and he touched base with these guys that I know. And he was like, yeah, man, coming out to a class. Let's talk. I did. And then it was just on from then. You know, so I think B&B had been around maybe 2, 3 months when I put in, when I sent Cody that message. And then it's just been full send since then. And you know, the cadre's evolved, the classes evolved, my space within the cadre's evolved. I used to teach all the time. Now I got a family of three, You know what I mean? So like the classes I go to, I got a little pick and choose. I typically do the VES classes that we do. But yeah, Cody, he's amazing. He made profound impact and changes in my organization, profound impact and changes within myself, my skill set, my thoughts. He's a mentor and a friend. I'm sad to see that he's not a part of our department anymore, but I'm happy to see where life has taken him for sure.
Definitely. Okay. With that being said, we've been hammering a lot on training and getting outside your comfort zone, how important outside training is, how important having certain skill sets are. What's your opinion on the physical fitness aspect of the fire service as well?
Oh, it's huge, bro. Right? Like, so huge. Like, that's pushback we'll get, like, in some of these classes or when we first talking about VES, right? Because I believe, like, when you're making entry for VES, you should be going head first. I don't think you should be stepping through for multiple reasons, right? Like, I'm in that position because I did my sweep and sound. It's making me more efficient and effective instead of stepping back out, stepping through. I'm able to get my eyes low to the ground as fast as possible. Maybe I can get that last glimpse of somebody in there or a glimpse of where that door that I think it's to the right across the hallway, but now maybe I can see. So all of those reasons, right? Some pushbacks like, hey man, that's kind of, it's difficult, doing a shoulder press in like that. It's like, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be. Like you should have stayed on top of your shit. Like I'm 48, like I'm going, like let's go, right? Like, so I think I've had that mindset my whole career. Understanding the physical nature of our job and our physical ability allows us to perform faster, more powerful, more efficient, and for longer. And just have had that understanding. And like we talked about before, the people that I'm around, people I surround myself, hard chargers, guys I'm trying to keep up with physically. Young cats in my station, our young guy who rides irons for us now, hard charging, man, 12 years younger than me. It's like, I got to be on point. Keep up with these guys and to keep up with my own thoughts of how I want to perform in this job. So definitely more mobility nowadays than, meathead back in the day. But yeah, man, I don't want my physicality, my, I don't want to not be able to perform to my best or to be in a situation where I can't help somebody because my physical was a detriment, right? Like that can't fucking happen, right? I don't want to be broken when I'm done with this job, right? I want to be able to come home and even now be energetic and be with my family. How can I do that if I'm not taking care of myself by what I eat, how I try to my mindful practices, and importantly, my physical practices, right? Like it's of utmost importance, I think. I
Definitely.
couldn't put a high,
Definitely. And it's one of those things, for me, I've always known like, hey, firefighting, you see the muscle guys, the guys are like, you could tell that guy's definitely worked out. He's jacked and all that. But, as I've gotten older and through experiences and talking to people, I've also noticed not only should you be able to have strength, you should have strength, and people should find that balance between strength and cardio. And I mean, there's so many different things out there, but for me, the biggest thing is actually doing work in the gear. And it's not a topic, it's not a popular topic because the PFAS and all that. But for me, at the end of the day, before this whole PFAS broke out all over social media, all over the internet, I was already in the gear, like years in it. And I'm like, well, if I got something, I got something. I'm not gonna say, oh, I need to limit my time in gear. No, because that's the almighty equalizer. Like
Agreed.
push-ups, air squats, hell, just doing a mile run or a mile walk in your gear. Like it's amazing to see. Like, so I wear two watches. So it's amazing to see what my heart rate becomes once I have the gear on and I start doing, not even going to work, just walking, doing simple things, how elevating when it's hot outside, how that affects you. So I totally understand, but some people aren't like, it seems like nowadays we have to be rated G when it comes to the, well, we can't say, how do we say something? We can't say this to this individual when it's like, that is our job. At the end of the day, the people who are wanting us to come help them, you can't just be like I'm out of shape. I'm sorry. I just wait for the next firefighter. Like, you have to be able to do something. But it seems to me like it's one of those topics we're shying away from. We can't say this. We can't, when it's like, why can't we have procedures and guidelines on everything else, but some departments shy away from the physical aspect portion? Just makes no
Yeah,
sense.
completely. I mean, what's even more so, like along those lines, right? Like those departments that may feel you have to shy away from it. Well, I tell you what, the public's still fucking thinking that when they see these cats roll up and they're like,
Facts.
this is who's here, right? So it's like we can't ignore the truth, and not only just for a performance measure, but also just for like their own personal health and lifestyle, right? Like where are we? It's heart attacks waiting to happen. You know what I mean? So we have to have these conversations with fire service. I feel lucky that my organization, you know, we do have a dedicated fitness coordinator who's out there pushing us, right? Like we've got incredibly well-stocked gyms, ability to have local memberships outside of work. So there's no excuse, right? Like again, I feel fortunate. The guys on my station, get after it. We have an amazing gym. Like really get after it, push me to where it's like, oh, you know what, maybe I need to not do a Metcon today and I need to do this today, so I'm ready for what we can could happen, you know. So it's all about balance, but like, you know, this is a physical job what we do. And again, I think that's why truck work really appealed to me, right? I didn't want to be stuck on the damn nozzle. You telling me to come over here? I wanted to be the guy opening up after I pushed the search, right? Like, and like the build the bit the ability to be able to do that is my physical. Because like you said, right, when I first got on, it's like you can't anticipate the heat that you retain just from working in your gear, you know, being first coming in the fire service, or even just how fucking hot your air can get being in a good fire, you know, because your bottle's being impacted, right? All of that stuff, right? So, you know, our physical ability we have to have to counteract all of that. What the job is.
Paramount. And you told no lies. I won't say much to give out any clue, but we conduct come October, you know, October's fire safety education month. I'm pretty sure October. Yeah, pretty sure. Anyways, we have a lot of station tours from schools, Boy Scout, Girl Scouts, churches, whatever the case may be, right? And we're inviting these adults in. Most of them are parents, and it's like, yep, this is the fire engine. This is what we have to wear, and then we'll use a firefighter to have them put their gear on so the kids aren't afraid. But like, if you're around a certain crew, it's crazy to see the eyes, 'cause like I'll watch the patrons coming in, and it's like, yep, this person right here, that's your firefighter. And they're like, okay. And I
Bro,
said it
first
because
impressions are real.
that's right. That's right. 'Cause shows like Chicago Fire and whatever that 911 thing, like, they show like fire, the male aspects are usually pretty fit. So, you know, the public's like, oh, okay, yeah, fireman. And then such and such walks in and they're like, huh. And right there, I told myself, mental note, as long as I can in my career, I will never want to look like that, ever.
There you go. Yeah, man.
I wanted to ask you real quick, what's your ladder complement on your trucks?
So outside the stick, right, exterior mounted, we have 20-foot extension, 24-foot extension. Back in our ladder bay, we've got a 45-foot banger, two 35-foot extensions, two 20-foot straight roofers, 16-foot roofer, 14, and a 12-foot roofer, a couple attic ladders. I also have a 5-foot first floor VES ladder that's located
Okay.
underneath our turntable. That's part of my tool assignments as a driver. And I think, you know, we got like a little giant something like
Okay.
that for when we
Okay.
gotta change the smoke detector or something, you
Okay.
know.
And I only ask because we don't have 45 bangers, but I'm sure That's a beast in itself. But the 35, if need be, I know the way places around the country teach students, you know, some say two, some say three people, but there might be a scenario where it's, you got to throw it, right? Like, you got
Yeah,
to take
just by
that
yourself,
35 and you got to
100%.
do it by yourself,
Yeah. Oh,
right?
yeah. Yeah. You know, that wasn't something that I had thought about until, God, I don't remember how many years back. We started to see these like YouTube videos or whatever it is, like somebody doing a three section 35 or a two section 35. And it's like, I remember sitting with Stens one day and was like, shit, like we've never done that. We should go try that. Right. Because that ability might have to happen now. And is that ability like you got to be low shouldered to carry that bad boy the whole way? Maybe not. Maybe you're dragging the fuck out of that thing,
That's
right?
right.
But you have to be able to get it done. I agree because that situation could occur. You know, just our first do. These guys, I missed this fire by half hour. That happened a half hour before shift change. You know, and it's this apartment structure we'd walked as a crew a number of times because of its configuration. And sure enough, this guy threw a Molotov cocktail, bottom floor apartment. It was across social media big time over this last month. Completely torched the front of this place, gotten a number of apartments, gotten the attic space, and they had people presented from windows, Delta side, Bravo side, right? It's like all hands get shit done time, right? And those fires can exist. So like you said about your ability to throw ladders, what is your own physical ability? You know, maybe those opportunities of where you have to throw a 35 because it's just you. Yeah, you have to think about all of those things, right? And it's a good test of like you know, it's not, you're not doing it. I mean, you can do it out there by yourself, but when we're doing it, we're doing it as a crew. It's just like, all right, well, let me show these guys what I got because, you know, I'm riding with them. And it's a good measure of where you're at and like where, what maybe you need to fix or work on yourself, myself, doing things like that. So that's
Definitely.
what I think. But anytime, anywhere, and anything can fucking happen. You know, I've been on some fire scenes that, you know, I had never even daydreamed about. You know what I mean? Because it's just that out there as or extraordinary circumstances that were going on. So if having your basics done, having the trust in your own physical ability, and then just getting after it, right?
Right, for sure.
No
Okay.
fucking, there ain't no timeouts.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. You know, we've hit a lot on like how we should view the job, outside training, physical fitness. One thing I'd like to talk to you before we close is the wellness part. You know, like
Yeah.
you when you're at work, you're there. Like you want to be there, you have a good crew, you guys want to go to jobs, you want to get it in. But sometimes I look at it as like the fire service, when we want to be so good, it becomes like the mistress between you and your significant other, where
Oh, yeah.
sometimes you're not focused on what's really important, but you're focused on like wanting to be good. And I'm not saying wanting to be good at the job is not important, but like family, wives, spouses, husbands, whatever the case, we tend to lose focus on that. So how do you find the balance with you yourself?
I think it's become easier as I've gotten older because my FOMO of missing a good fire has decreased some. Like it still fucking stings, right? But like, you know, I remember earlier in my career, it's like I never wanted to take a day off because I didn't want to fucking miss a job, you know? And you know, we just as I came back from firemanship this last July, you know, it's like I gotta be with the fam. Like I've been so focused on getting my lecture ready and getting ready to teach that like, you know, my wife understands, right? She understands what like I need to focus, I need to put time in. I need to understand that I need to focus and put time in for them, to balance that as well. So the ability to take time off without thinking about, you know, missing out. Now, as I'm getting later in my career and getting to the last edge of my career, it's just like, yo, I love my time off. It's fucking fantastic being home, right? But at the same time, you know, earlier when I had, you know, I have a 16, a 14, and an 8 year old right now. But when my 16 and 14 year old were much younger, you know, I used to hear all the time, oh, Papa's always tired. Papa's grumpy because he's tired. And they were right? Because I work at a busy house and I used to work a lot. And my energy was there. Whereas that's not the most important thing in my life. They're the most important thing in my life. The job is the most important thing when I'm there at work, right? But my family's first and foremost. So how, what do I need to do to be better? And just like we talked about physicality for the job, I use physicality for my betterment. It is my stress relief. It is how I take out that bad juju so that I can be a little bit more grounded, right? What type of mindfulness practices do I need to do? When do I need to step back and realize, like, I need to take some time off. I need to be at home. I've been at work for quite a bit. There's a lot going on. Easier to do now, again, as I've grown in the career and my family's grown and shit, the family schedule has grown. It's like, shit, I gotta be home because I gotta help drive these kids around. But yeah, it's easy to get out of whack, and it's definitely one of those reasons why I do teach less with Brothers in Battles I used to, because there's Brothers in Battles at conferences all over the goddamn country now, going international, all these classes, and the opportunity to go out there and share is amazing. I love teaching, but I have to balance that the way I'm already away from work, away because I'm at work, right? How much can I be away, or do I want to be away from these times that I'm not going to get back from my kids? So, not that I don't go and teach, but like that's what I think about first, right? Is how's that going to impact my family? And then my wife, she's amazing, in her support for not only what I do at work, but also those teaching opportunities, because she wants me to, right? She knows I have a passion for it, so like she helps me in that, like, hey, you should go to this, like, we'll be okay, we'll be back, just don't stack a bunch of them on top of each other. So I'm blessed in that fashion, but it is easy to get out of balance, especially when you find your taste for how amazing this job is, how good you want to be at it. So what you need to do, these classes that you want to take, these courses you need to go. One course I failed to mention was FDTN, right, in outside Indy. Amazing, amazing place. Personally, the best live fire training I've ever had in my career was going out there with McCormick and all those individuals. The level of instructors, top notch, right? But like finding those opportunities, I just have to have more talks to my wife as to what I want to do and how that fits in what we do. Can't lose sight of that.
Definitely. Okay. And my last question, I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up within the fire service?
I think for just within my own fire department, I'm probably going to end my career training. It's kind of how I see myself, whether that is as a lead truck trainer again down at the on truck two, or I've considered a promotion, by the last three, four promotional opportunities within my job, and I've always decided to not take it because of where I ride, who I ride with, and what I get to do. As I'm getting to the last bit of my career, I'm thinking about it again. Like, do I want to promote? And if I was to do so, how I'd want to end as like a training lieutenant, not as an engine lieutenant. Nothing against engine guys. Yeah, so some facet of training is how I see myself stepping away.
Okay. And I'm sure to me it's all on the individual, but if you were to your last day, you were to retire out as driver of truck seven and not promoting, is that something you're okay with? Because
Oh, hell
another
yeah.
thing I see is, and I get it. Like, you want to be around individuals that want to push you to be better, but sometimes that person going up for a promotion, being off, that's just not what they want to do. And some people just can't understand it. They look at it as, well, would your career have been different if you retired as this rank or that or whatever? But like, for me, it's all individual based. I understand we should want our go-getters to promote, to become company officers, because that's how you don't have the shit bags making the decisions for you, the ones that have never done the job in the first place. But then again, too, we need the ones that are just, they are jam up at what they do, whether that's a backstep, whether that's a tailorman, whether that's just a driver. So you wouldn't have any regrets, right?
None at all. The most influential, excuse me, the most influential people in the fire stations are those senior firefighters, hands down. Firefighters drive culture. Officers are transient. right? When you come into the job as a new firefighter, who are you looking at? Right? You're looking at that person that's wearing the same uniform as you, right? That senior person on your crew, right? That's the person you're emulating. Those are the ones that are really demonstrating the behavior in which you should be expecting to perform, right? Because they're on that same job classification. I think that informal leadership of senior firefighters is paramount and is needed, which is why I've been so comfortable with staying a firefighter for almost these 23 years of my career in Portland, right? Not only because of what I get to do, right? I think I have the best job in the world, man. I get to drive truck seven. When I go to fires, I get a VES if I'm first due. If not, if we're second due, we're going on the roof. I got the saw in my hands. Like, I'm doing the things why I wanted to sign up in the first place, right? And the impact that you can have, as I've discovered throughout my career, as just being so-called only a firefighter, is huge, right? Because of the experience you can gain, the reputation you can make for yourselves, not only in your experience, but how you share that, right? So, I would have no qualms about ending as a firefighter. It's kind of how I always seen myself, just ending as a firefighter. But I'd be remiss in myself if I wasn't thinking about, should I take this promotional? And as I said, the past three or four times, it's always come back as a no, because it's like, why would I want to give up this in which I'm happy for? Right? It'd only be for monetary reasons for me instead of any kind of, leadership influence. Yeah, maybe I have formalized leadership, but I believe that I can and am a leader as a firefighter within the job. So no qualms on that.
Awesome. Awesome. Anthony, I really appreciate you coming on, man, talking shop, dropping some words of wisdom. I also have to thank John Kwan for getting me in contact with you.
Oh yeah, John's
John's
a guy. He's my guy.
another stud, always trying to better himself and those around him. And so I can see why you two gravitated to each other. But I just want to say thank you for coming on my talking shop and like just being 100% real and transparent.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I enjoyed our conversation for sure.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.